discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
Well, never before in our history have we known as much as we do today about our universe. But while our wonder grows at the unspeakable hugeness of space, you don't often hear the creator getting a ton of credit. Well, enter Dr. David Bradstreet. In his book, Starstruck, this celebrated professor at Philadelphia's Eastern University and what is known as an astronomy rock star says the heavens' mind-boggling display is the work of the creator. And along with his co-writer, Steve Raby, he takes readers on a journey into the biggest story ever. And it is a legitimate treat to have this gentleman back on the road for a return visit. A tremendous day to you, sir. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ryan. It's great to be with you again.
This is kind of a fun question to begin with because I know that it's not a simple one to answer, but you certainly tackle it extensively in the book. Just how big is the universe, sir?
About 3.5 miles across. Well, that's not the answer you're looking for. Oh, okay. Let me change that. It's such an interesting question that has no answer in a way. I mean, have you ever walked to the top of a tall building and went right up to the edge of it, look over, and have like a sinking feeling in your stomach?
Yes.
Like you almost get sick? Have you ever had that feeling? I know I have.
Terrifying.
Do you have that feeling when you're in a jet plane looking out the window?
You know, I'm trying to think of how I feel. I'm usually more claustrophobic than afraid of heights, but that's probably not what you were looking for.
Well, I know that I'm afraid of heights if they're not too tall, but in an airplane it never even strikes me that, you know, I'm 5 miles above the ground, I look and it doesn't give me a queasy feeling at all.
That's a great point. Yeah.
I think the universe is like that. When you're dealing with distances that you're familiar with, like falling from 50 or 60 or 70 feet, that scares you. But when you start dealing with distances that you can't even comprehend, you don't know enough to fear it because it's beyond your comprehension. I think that's one way of looking at the size of the universe. It's so big, it's just beyond human comprehension. We can put numbers to it. We can talk billions of light years, but what does that mean to a human being who's used to dealing in a few miles or less? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If you want a scientific answer to the question, how big is the universe? We estimate it's about 47 billion light years across at this present time. So what does that mean? That means that since light travels about 6 trillion miles in a year, going at 186,000 miles per second,
wow.
There's 31 million odd seconds in a year. So light goes 6 trillion miles in 1 year of time. So multiply that times 47 billion, and you'd have how many miles there are roughly in the universe at the moment, better known as what? So, those numbers don't mean anything. It's just like when you say we owe ourselves $20 trillion in the national debt. We get away with that. Why? Because that's a number beyond human comprehension.
Wow.
So the universe is bigger than you can really imagine. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we don't just fall down on our knees all the time in fear. Because it's so big, it's beyond our comprehension.
And as a matter of fact, you discussed this as well. We don't even know whether it's infinite or not.
No, we don't. That turns out to depend on how much mass there is in the universe. And we're not sure how much mass there is. And so if there's enough mass, then the universe would be finite but unbounded, meaning just like the Earth in a sense. The Earth has a finite surface. If we go to a kind of a two-dimensional analogy, the Earth has a finite surface, but you could travel on the Earth forever and never come to an end.
Sure.
Does that make sense? Right? You just keep
sure.
Repeating where you've been. The universe could have properties like that where it's finite, but you'll never find an edge. And quite frankly, if that's the case, we're actually a black hole.
Whoa.
Yeah, so we know what happens inside a black hole. It's us. That's if the mass, if there's enough mass to close the universe, it's said. If there isn't, then the universe goes on forever. And what does that mean? I don't know. What does infinity mean? I mean, Buzz Lightyear used to talk about it, you know, to infinity and beyond. You know, the universe would go on forever if there's not enough mass. So it's one of those two. It's either infinite or it's finite with no boundary. And we don't know the answer to that yet.
Amazing. It's just a beautiful thing to be hearing you discuss how many seconds are a year, and then all of a sudden just the voice of Tim Allen, Buzz Lightyear, just comes into your head. This is, by the way, this is very much what makes the book Starstruck, seeing the creator in the wonders of our cosmos, so much fun to read. The author, Dr. David Bradstreet, is with us, an award-winning professor, an astronomer. And the book is so many truth bombs, one after the other, and then just the great sense of humor of this man comes out as well. So it really is a treat to read the book. At the heart of the book is you saying that the more you learn about creation, the more you marvel at its creator. Introduce us to the big picture of what you mean when you say that, sir.
That really relates to the idea that the more you know about something, the more you appreciate it. Like if you go into an art museum, the Philadelphia Art Museum is one of the best in the world. And if you go in there and you look at some of the art and you don't know anything about the artist or the genre of art that is, or what you look at it and you might say, oh, that's horrible. That's ugly. That's, you know, my four-year-old could do that. And that really, that belies a level of ignorance about the artwork usually. And so science is much that way, and the universe is much that way, that the more you learn about God's creation, the more in awe you will be, because you find that it's this tremendously complex, intricate tapestry that somehow works beautifully together. And the more you learn about it, the more intricacy that you discover, the more it's like, I can't believe this. This is just incredible. What a tremendous artist you are, God, to give us all this beauty and functionality at the same time. And so the idea of intricate simplicity, it sounds like a paradox, but often we find great truths in paradoxes, and that is that although that if you get down to the nitty-gritty of the universe, there's a lot of complexity, and yet it's simple enough that you can teach elementary physics to young people. Laws that govern both how cats are flying around the room if you throw them, or you know how planets go around the sun, or how galaxies rotate or fly through the universe. The laws are all the same. And so there's that simplicity of being able to have a universal set of laws rather than, as the ancients thought, one set of laws for the earth and one set of laws for the heavens.
This is not nearly as deep and profound as what you were just saying, but did I understand you correctly to say, as cats are being thrown around the world, is that what you said?
Yeah, you have to remember, I speak and teach to college students, and sometimes I'll say things to wake them up. So I love cats, so you know, I don't mean to offend any cat lovers because I love cats. But again, it's the concept of simple, mundane things like throwing a ball or whatever. Yeah, when I say throw cats, that wakes the kids up in the classroom, so.
Well,
it certainly got your attention, didn't it?
I just had this picture of you sitting in this beautiful mahogany library, and you know, all of a sudden this cat just flies beside your head. So it was a beautiful word picture. Thank you for it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, you detailed the scenario where life can exist on Earth that is so fascinating because we don't actively think about this so much, but you talk about the ridiculous weather conditions on other planets, just even in our own solar system, and it becomes pretty clear that we could never survive on those planets. You say the Earth is basically a Goldilocks planet. It's a fun phrase, but it's quite profound. What does that mean?
Well, we all know the story of Goldilocks, the interloper who broke into the bear's cottage. She's really the villain in the story. And she goes around to different things, and she tries out the father's porridge and the mother's porridge and then the baby's porridge. And, you know, the Goldilocks gets When she gets to the baby chair and the baby porridge and the baby's bed, that's the one that's just right. And the others don't work at all. And so the Earth, there are so many things that have gone right with the Earth for life to exist, and not just exist, but to be bountiful everywhere we go on the Earth. Even the deepest oceans has life. That it doesn't seem to be that this is going to be a coincidence. So it's called the Goldilocks planet because of all the possibilities, which we see a lot of those in the other planets, and what the Earth would have been like if the Earth had been closer to the sun or further from the sun. Just a few million miles closer, and the Earth would be too hot. If it was, several million miles further out, it would be too cold. And so we have this Goldilocks zone, this distance from the sun where water can exist in a liquid state. And that's called the Goldilocks or life zone of a star. And that's where the Earth resides.
And the likelihood, which you expand on, of course, in the book, the likelihood that that would exist in a completely organic way, totally free of the influence of a designer, is rather small.
But not impossible. It's interesting that, you can't prove God exists through science. And I think God has set it up that way. The scriptures are clear that you can only please God through faith. If we could prove God existed, you wouldn't need faith. And so it's you can put up evidence, I think, in science and in creation. And the Bible, says that as well, that, those who see the universe are without excuse. On the flip side, you still have to take that leap of faith. To believe in God.
It's
not proof. It's evidence, not proof.
Oh, that's fascinating. It's evidence and not proof. Fascinating. Dr. David Bradstreet is an award-winning professor, astronomer. He has an asteroid named after him, by the way. That's true, isn't it?
It is true. With my luck, it'll be the one that hits us next Tuesday.
Wait, is there an asteroid that's going to hit us next Tuesday?
I'll let you know. More than likely not, but I don't want to scare anybody, but we are going to get hit by something sometime. It could be 10,000 years from now. It could be months from now. It's an inevitability. It's happened in the past. It'll happen in the future. Even the Bible talks about an angel throwing a fiery mountain into the sea. It's Revelation 8:8. That sounds like an asteroid to me.
Wow.
So, it's as strange and perhaps funny as it sounds. It's frankly, it's a certainty. It's going to happen someday.
You have a very entertaining way of describing asteroids in the book too. And there's so many things I want to ask you about that. It's one big run-on sentence in this interview. But Dr. David Bradstreet, if you're just tuning in, he's an award-winning professor. He has his own asteroid. He's an astronomer, and the book he's written is called Starstruck: Seeing the Creator in the Wonders of Our Cosmos. And
yeah, Ryan, it's not my asteroid. I don't like have it in my backyard. Do you know what I mean? They named the asteroid for me because of things I've done for science and for science education. But it's not my asteroid. It's just got my name on it.
That's a really important point. Yeah, that would be pretty impressive if you were able to corral it with your own will. That would really something.
I don't think that the township rules would allow an asteroid 4 or 5 miles across in my backyard. I don't think that would work.
Now, there's a follow-up question here I want to ask, because what you just said regarding making the argument from facts or from evidence for the existence of God is so fascinating. You did this interview with Bible Gateway, and you said, even the most compelling presentation of the scientific case for God is not going to convince the most committed atheist that God exists. And yet, it's absolutely worth it to make that argument. What makes you say that, sir?
Well, again, I referred before about the faith issue, that we can only really believe in God by faith, and I sincerely believe that. Atheists and other people, I don't think you can argue people into heaven. I don't think that you can give proofs that necessarily will convince them. Some might, but I've always found that people are more convinced by how you live and how you treat them than they are by what you say. So I try to love people and respect them, and respect their beliefs and maybe gently try to point out that, well, maybe there's another way of thinking about this, or here's some information you might not be aware of. Rather than pounding them over the head with the cross, Jesus never did that.
You speak of history long past, and I love the historical nature of many parts of the book. It's kind of hard to believe, but for most of our history as humanity, we really have literally believed that we were the center of the universe, right? That's fair to say?
Yeah, we still believe that. maybe not physically,
yeah.
But intellectually, we still think that humanity is the center of the universe. We still, you know, that system was called the geocentric system, which geo means earth, and centric, of course, means centered. If you just flip the first two letters of geocentric, you get what that system really is. It's an egocentric system.
Mm.
It puts man at the very center of the entire universe. And that was believed for thousands of years. And so now we've come to find that we're on a rock spinning around a relatively ordinary star, not an average star, but an ordinary one, you know, in a nice-sized galaxy, but one galaxy out of about 130 billion other galaxies. And so we're special in a way, but we're not the center of the universe. In fact, the only redeeming thing about the Earth, perhaps the most important thing, is that the creator of the universe actually walked here once.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's beautifully said. That's beautifully said. Well, and that obviously begs a question about E.T., which I want to ask you if we have a moment. But Galileo Galilei, did I say that right for the first?
You did.
What?
You did.
Oh, my goodness. Now, he was central in discovering that we were not indeed the center of the universe, right? But then he actually got in pretty big trouble for discovering that.
Yes, basically, he was the first one to use a telescope to look at the heavens and then publicize that through a book called The Starry Messenger. And, of course, he wrote it in Italian instead of writing it in Latin, which all the educated books were written in, so that, you know, we don't want to educate the common people. That would be crazy, right? So he wrote his book in Italian so everybody could understand it. And his telescopic observations basically started the downfall of this Earth-centered or geocentric system, because he showed without doubt that Venus orbited the sun because of the way Venus changed its phase, much like our moon changes phases. As Venus goes around the sun, there was no possible way for Venus to exhibit those phase changes and it not be going around the sun. I mean, that was proof that it went around the sun. And so people started to realize, gee, you know, this sun-centered system starts to make sense. And what do you do with Venus? I mean, Venus is definitely going around the sun. Maybe everything's going around the sun. The problem was the church wasn't ready to hear that. The church had already accepted the geocentric system. They'd already interpreted scripture in a way that would kind of bolster that idea, although I would consider that to be a misinterpretation of scripture. And so Galileo got into trouble because he basically wanted to just tell everybody, hey, it's a sun-centered system, and the church said, no, we're not ready to tell people that, so shut up. And they threatened him, and he shut up.
That is the voice of Dr. David Bradstreet, an award-winning professor, astronomer, and the author of Starstruck, Seeing the Creator in the Wonders of Our Cosmos. There are so many fascinating things in this book that I would love to ask you about. One of the things that we did not have a chance to talk about the first time you appeared on the program, that is at the heart of so much of this discovery that you talk about in the book, are these space probes that NASA lofts into space. And these fascinate me, Doctor, because how much have we learned from these probes, and how on earth can we keep communicating with them even as they get so very far away from us?
That's such a good question. There's no way I can possibly encapsulate everything we've learned from all these hundreds and hundreds of satellites that we've launched since the late 50s. I mean, we don't even think about GPS and communication and your cell phones, and I mean, it just goes on and on, that without satellites, we would be sunk. Just Earth-orbiting satellites. You know, we don't even, we want to see what weather looks like. We don't have to go to the weather person. We can go to the internet and see for ourselves.
Right.
The geostationary satellites to show the weather for the United States or any part of the world. We just take that completely for granted. And then these probes that are continuing on, like the Voyager probes that were launched in the 70s, we can still detect them because we aim our huge radio antennas at them. And so we can still pick up the feeble radio signals that they're sending back. It really is kind of miraculous. It really is. It's astounding. And it's a safe way to explore the solar system.
Amazing. You spoke to the topic of just the fact that we are so very small in such a massive, massive universe. And it does kind of beg the question, do you believe that there could be intelligent life out there somewhere in the universe? Do you think that's a possibility, or have you closed that off in your mind?
No, to me, it's a definite possibility. Now, there's two answers to that question. If I say that there is life out there, that's kind of cool. If I said we're the only intelligent life in the whole universe, that has its own amazing aspect to it.
True. Mm-hmm.
So no matter what the answer to that question is, it will blow your head apart. And my own feeling is, you know, Jesus said to the Jews, I have sheep you know not of. And he was talking about the Gentiles, the non-Jewish peoples, who he also came to save. And so I wonder if there aren't some sheep we know not of in the universe. Why do we think we're the only created, sentient life in the universe? Why do we think that? Why is that necessarily the case? It may not be the case, or it may be the case. Maybe we need a universe this big, this huge, this diverse, for life like us to even exist. We don't know the answer to that question. I think it's going to be kind of interesting if and when we actually have incontrovertible evidence that there is extraterrestrial life. How are we going to handle that? How are we going to incorporate that into our philosophies, into our religions, et cetera? It's going to be a very interesting time.
Wow. Well, we have just about 3 minutes left, and I had every confidence this conversation would go briskly, and certainly it has. Although I hope you feel that way, too. Has it felt like an eternity to you?
Yeah, you're like the worst interviewer ever. I'm sitting here waiting for this to get over. I don't, you know. No, I can't believe a half hour has gone by already.
That was beautiful. Dr. David Bradstreet, and sir, before we get to the sort of our closing thoughts, as it were, if somebody's just fascinated by this, and how could they not be, what's the best place to go to find out more about you, your work, and pick up a copy of the book, sir?
Well, the best place to purchase the book is, I would say, Amazon. They have the best price. Amazon.com. If you just put in Starstruck and Bradstreet, it'll come up. And if you have doubts about the book, read some of the reviews. And I haven't paid any of those people for those reviews, so I think you'll find lots of people really like and enjoy the book very much. If they want to find out about me, our website is euastronomy.com.
Tremendous.
EU for Eastern University, so euastronomy.com.
euastronomy.com.
Right.
The book is so much fun to read because even if you are not intellectually lofty like I am not, it is so fascinating and it is hilarious. Like listening to Dr. Bradstreet talk, you hear so much wisdom and then just the wit and the mirth of this man as well. That is absolutely reflected in the book. I don't know how you did that, but you sure did.
Well, again, I teach all ages from 3-year-olds up to 95-year-olds. And so if you don't have it, do it with humor, they're all going to fall asleep, especially at 8 in the morning.
Well, we have taken plenty of your time away from molding young minds today. Dr. David Bradstreet, the award-winning professor, astronomer, the author of Starstruck, Seeing the Creator in the Wonders of Our Cosmos. Sir, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Ryan. I hope we can do it again.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.
Starry night, he changed my life, and I'm giving it all to the only son who gave me hope when I had none. So let the praise.